Well, no, let's not. Let's
see if it'll go.
And I don't think people can read that. Do we need to dim the lights?
If
I don't really like dimming the lights if you don't need to.
If they can read it.
We'll ask people.
It's just the lights out here.
I know, but still. Right? Puts him to sleep.
One of my problems.
When did you think you were starting?
6 a.m. Yes, but
I know. I thought it was 5.
I'm sorry.
No, that's fine.
What do we do with the all rides thing?
Yeah, really. All right, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to go ahead and get started. There are still a few people signing in, but we'll go ahead and try to get started close to on time. This is approximately 6 o'clock. On today, January 5th, we're here at Brookings. This is the appointed, the notice time and location for this evening's public hearing. I'm Commissioner Dusty Johnson. With me this evening are Commissioners Steve Kolbeck and Gary Hansen. And also up at the front table is our General Counsel John Smith and our Commission Advisor Greg Rislov. We've also got a number of other staffers from the Public Utilities Commission here that we'll take a minute to introduce in the event that you've got questions after the hearing. We've got attorney Kara Semler back manning the table. We've got Stacy Splitsosher back there. Brian Rounds up here. Tim Binder over in that corner. Often at these public hearings, we have the public outnumbered, but that's not the case tonight. Some of you probably came because you heard the rumor Commissioner Kolbeck was singing tonight. That's not the case. My apologies. But I do think we've got a great presentation. We're going to make some legal comments to start this off so people know exactly what we're doing here tonight. This is a public input hearing, and this deals with the Buffalo Ridge 2 LLC group, and application they've made, and that's a subsidiary of Iberdrola Renewables, and their application is for a wind energy facility. And a lot of you know that that's for the construction of a wind farm and associated collection substation and electrical interconnection system. The applicant proposes to construct and operate a wind farm on up to 77 acres dispersed throughout portions of up to 77 sections of land in Brookings and Dual County, as well as a 13-mile long, 115 kilovolt overhead transmission line. The proposed wind farm could have a nameplate capacity of up to 306 megawatts. Now, the purpose of this hearing is really twofold. The first is for the applicant to provide information to you all on what this project is proposed to look like. The second and more important opportunity, I think, is for you all to tell us at the commission what you think about this project. And as a result, we would encourage you all to feel free to make comments. Now, for some reason tonight, you're not comfortable making public comment. That's fine. We'd be happy to receive written comment at the Public Utilities Commission. And, you know, we will take those comments right up until the point where we make a decision. The sooner is probably the better, in that if we get them earlier, they may be able to be more of a part of our deliberation process. But certainly there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions and make statements tonight. Now, you can also access the information, the non-confidential information, on this project at our Public Utilities Commission website. And there's a lot of information on there, and so rather than walk you through all the links, I would just say you can call us or you can talk with any of the staffers here tonight or any of the commissioners, and we'll try to walk you through how you can get access to that information online. Now, currently, the parties to this proceeding, there are just two of them, and that's the applicant and the Public Utilities Commission. Under South Dakota law, each municipality, county, and governmental agency in the area where the facility is proposed to be constructed or any person or entity, that means you all, may be granted party status in the proceeding by making a written application to the commission on or before January 16th, 2009. We do have applications here. I believe Ms. Semler has some applications for party status. Now, you don't need to have party status to make your views known. Gaining party status does provide you some additional opportunities as well as some legal obligations that I think most of you probably wouldn't need to participate at the level you want to participate in. But if you might want to, in a hearing, call witnesses, cross-examine witnesses, introduce your own evidence, certainly you would have that opportunity if granted party status by the commission. Now, there are really four things that the applicant has to do in order to have its permit approved. The first is that the proposed energy conversion facility must comply with all applicable laws and rules. Second, the energy conversion facility must not pose a threat of serious injury to the environment or to the social and economic condition of inhabitants or expected inhabitants of the siting area. Third, the energy conversion facility must not substantially impair the health, safety, or welfare of the inhabitants. And finally, fourth, the energy conversion facility must not unduly interfere with the orderly development of the region. Now, based on these factors, once we hear all of the evidence, and it really the applicant has the burden of proof to prove all of those things, once we hear all of the evidence, then the commission really has three options. We can deny the application, we can approve the application, or we can approve the application with a number of conditions and stipulations based on how we think that facility should be constructed and or operated. Now, we're going to begin the hearing tonight by having the applicant make a presentation, as we explained. And following that, we were going to have a mic, and we'll just ask you to come up maybe right in the middle here. Just stand. We'll have a microphone, a walking around microphone. And Ms. Splitstosher has the microphone. And so after we hear from the applicant, we'll take either comments or questions. We're going to kick it off at this time to Mr. Brett Kennecke for Buffalo Ridge. And Mr. Kennecke, take it away. Oh, and I should add one final thing, and we'll remind you one more time. Ms. Risty is serving as our court reporter this evening, and we would just ask that you speak slowly, clearly, and loudly anytime you'd like to make yourself heard. Mr. Kennecke, proceed.
Thank you, Commissioner Johnson, and commissioners and commission staff. Well, I appreciate being here in Brookings tonight. It's always good to be back in the shadow of the Campanile. My name is Brett Kennecke. I'm a lawyer from Pierre, and I routinely represent clients before the Public Utilities Commission, and that's what I'm doing here tonight. I'm representing Iberdrola Renewables with respect to its application to the Public Utilities Commission to construct the proposed Buffalo Ridge 2 wind farm here in Brookings and then up north in Doolittle County. The Buffalo Ridge 2 is a large wind project, and because of its size, it does require a siting permit, which is different from the other wind farms which have already been constructed in Brookings County. This will be 306 megawatts. And as Commissioner Johnson explained, this meeting is convened to hear from the public about the project and not really so much from my client, Iberdrola. However, we do think and recognize that there might be some of you in the crowd who have not heard much about this project or perhaps are here for more information. And so we've got a short presentation to put on for you so that you can learn more about the project. That said, it's very important to my client, the assembled people up here and other people in front of me, to hear your viewpoint and your concerns about the project. That's why we're here, and we'll be very glad to do that once our short presentation is over. So we very much look forward to having that discussion with you here tonight. We want to hear what you have to say about the project, and I thank you in advance for coming and for your interest. With that said, I'll turn the microphone over to Mr. Tim Seck. He's the director of the project for Iberdrola Renewables. He lives in the Twin Cities and is here tonight to explain a little bit about Iberdrola and a little bit about the project. Then we'll pass the microphone to Paul Skirdahl, an engineer from Portland, who will have some discussion about the engineering and construction. And then to Dave Sweet, who is the local manager for Iberdrola and lives right here in this area, and we'll talk about operations and maintenance with him. Thank you very much.
Mr. Seck, before you get started, let's do a volume check. If you can't hear, raise your hand, and we'll right there. Okay, a few more. Mr. Seck, let's start by try to speak close with the mic, and then we'll adjust volume on our end a little bit. If you still can't hear, just please raise your hand and somebody will come over and we'll figure out what we can do to help. Go ahead, Mr. Seck.
Thanks, Commissioner Johnson. My name is Tim Sack, and I'm pleased to be here in the Brookings and Dual County area. We're a proud member of this community. We've recently built two wind projects in Brookings County, and we look forward to being here tonight and talking to you about an expansion that we're proposing. Before I talk about the project, I want to talk a little bit about, give you an overview, a quick overview on the company, and then talk about the proposed project and where we're at in the development process and where we need to go. So with that, advance. Iberdrola Renewables is the largest owner-operator of wind power projects in the world. We have over 8,000 megawatts of wind around the country, around the world. In South Dakota, we have, in 2007, we completed 54 megawatts of wind development, and then just at the end of December this last year, in 2008, we completed another 50-megawatt project called Buffalo Ridge 1. We've got projects across the country. We've got a number of projects clustered in the Pacific Northwest. We have a number in California. We have a number of projects in kind of the four-state region in the Midwest, in Iowa, Minnesota, South Dakota, and we're building a project right now in North Dakota, and we've got a couple of other projects that aren't even on this map that recently were completed. And we've got a number of projects in the Northeast. So we've got projects from coast to coast, but a big concentration in this area because of the wind resource. And the project is that's being proposed, as Commissioner Johnson said, is a 306 megawatt project. We're looking at turbines ranging in size from 1.5 megawatts to 2.4 megawatts. The hub height of the towers will be anywhere from 80 to 100 meters, which is roughly 262 to 328 feet. And the rotor diameter of these turbines is anywhere from 77 meters to 95 meters, or 256 feet to 312 feet. So they're large turbines, similar to the ones that we recently completed in the Buffalo Ridge 1 project and the Mid-Dakota project. The project will also consist of 16-foot gravel roads, low profile, where we run from the county or township road to the wind turbine. We'll have underground collection systems running 34-5, and then we'll have overhead transmission ranging from in size from 34.5 kilovolts to 115 kilovolts. That's about 13 miles. And then the project will all the power from the project will be collected and delivered back to the Brookings County substation, which is owned by Xcel Energy. The project will also consist, so we'll have one project substation immediately adjacent to the Brookings County substation of our own. And then we'll have another project substation a little further north, and I'll show you that in a minute. The project will also consist of a couple of permanent meteorological towers that are unguided, they're freestanding, and then what we call a sonar piece of equipment that also measures wind speeds, but it's not a tower. It's more of a kind of like a compressed, no, it's the size of like a compressor, a small compressor. The target and service date of the project is in the 2010 to 2011 time frame, and the projects give you a sense of how much power will be produced at the project. It will produce enough energy to meet the annual energy needs of about 100,000 homes, so it's a significant project in terms of how much energy it will provide to this region and the state. The project boundary is indicated on this map, and it's on the handout. Roughly, the heart of the project is bounded between Toronto, Astoria, and White. So that's kind of where we're focusing the project. It's, as it was indicated, it's spread out over about 77 sections, but we'll only use the footprint, the actual footprint of the project will only be about 77 acres, or less than 1%. There's a couple of maps right over here to the left and in our application. And the maps show a preliminary layout for a 2-megawatt turbine. There's about 166 dots on the map that represent proposed turbine locations, and the overhead collection line is indicated along with the proposed roads and underground, proposed O&M building, and the permanent met tower, and all the facilities are kind of outlined in that map. There are a number of key steps in as you move to develop a project, and the first and foremost starts with, you know, what land is available. And so in order for us to build a project, we need a partnership with landowners. So we've gone out and entered into contracts with landowners who want to participate in the project. It's a voluntary contract, and you know, all the facilities that we're proposing are on land that's or we have a lease with the landowner. So we've got a relationship and a partnership with the landowners that wanted to participate in the project. We've got another key component is wind data. We've put up a number of meteorological towers around the site to collect data on what kind of wind resource we have in the area, and that's absolutely critical to a successful project if you want to get financing, is you have to have a long-term record of the wind at the site. Another key component to a successful project is an interconnection agreement, and these are interconnection agreement. And so we filed applications to the Midwest Independent System Operator, who's kind of like the traffic cop of who can plug into the grid in this particular region. And we applied 4 years ago for our first application for 210 megawatts. And we recently entered into an interconnection agreement with MISO for 210 megawatts. So it takes a while to get through that process. We recently got through it for the first part of this project for the 210 megawatts. And I expect in the first quarter of 2009, we'll enter into the interconnection agreement with MISO for the other remaining 96 megawatts. Once we start moving forward with the project, we need to develop what we call a constraint map. And the constraint map looks at what land is available to us under lease and what are the setbacks that are required in order for us to develop the project. So we looked at the setbacks in Brookings County and Doolittle County and used those setbacks to develop our layout. The setbacks included the greater of 50 dBA or 1,000 feet from homes and businesses. It requires setbacks from roads and property lines where we don't have a lease on the other side of the greater of 500 feet or 1.1 times the total height of the turbine to the tip of the blade. So we've got those kind of setbacks in a map, and then we give that to our meteorology group when they develop a layout based on where they can put the turbines based on those constraints. Then we develop a preliminary layout, and the layout that you see over here and I showed you previously, that's a preliminary layout for a 2-megawatt turbine. And we went out after we generated that layout, then we went out and staked it all in everybody's field. There's little wood stakes with a pink ribbon. Then after it's staked, we go out and review it. There's a bunch of us piled in the car. It's the environmental folks. It's the construction engineers. It's the developer. It's the meteorologist. We're all looking at, you know, how are there some shifts that we need to make based on what we're seeing out in the field? And there always are. So we make some changes to the layout. Then we go out and do a number of surveys. We do surveys for cultural resources, surveys for wetlands, surveys for habitat, surveys for avian or bird use. And when we get the results of all those studies, then we make additional changes to the layout. So we completed those studies at the end of the year. We're writing up the studies. I think we've submitted the avian report to the commission. We'll be submitting the other reports shortly. Then we have a series of meetings with our landowners to receive input on where we're proposing to put the facilities. And we've had, I think, at least three meetings with the landowners to seek input and provide them with updates on the project. And so we've made additional changes to the layout based on those meetings. And right now, we're here to talk about this next phase of the project, and that's the permitting phase. So we've made an application to the Public Utilities Commission for a site permit, and we've also made a permit application to the Brookings County for conditional use permit, and that hearing's tomorrow night. So we're in the permitting phase, and that may come up with some changes that require us to tweak our layout. So it's kind of an iterative process in terms of the layout. The next phase is for the company to decide that they're going to allocate turbines to the project. If the project is going to get built in 2010, they'll make that decision in the first half of 2009. And then they'll say, okay, you know, Buffalo Ridge 2 is going to get 306 megawatts of turbine X. And if it's a turbine that's, you know, it's a 2.4 megawatt turbine, then we'll have less turbines than what's shown on the map, and it'll have different spacing because they're going to have larger rotors and need to be spaced out more. If it's a smaller turbine, then we'll have, you know, the turbines probably closer together because your rotor diameters will be smaller, and that allows you to put them closer together. So once we finalize the turbine, then we go out and do the geotech work to determine that the site is suitable for the turbine foundation at each location. And that typically requires us to make some changes based on soil conditions. The final two components that need to occur before we build the project is to sell the power either to a utility, a regional utility under a long-term power purchase agreement, or if the company feels comfortable that we can sell the power into the market and be able to make our internal rate of return at the market price, then we might move forward under what's called a merchant approach. And we certainly got experience doing that in the region and nationally, and we're comfortable with that. So that may be an option for us here. And finally, the last step in a project is the financing. And our company typically balance sheet finances the projects through construction, which means we don't need to go out and secure funding once we're comfortable moving forward with the project. So those are kind of the key steps in the development, and we're kind of at the permitting stage, and we've got a few more steps left to go before we get to the finish line. So with that, I'll wraps up kind of the development portion of the presentation. I'm going to turn it over to Paul Skirdall. Paul's our Director of Construction Engineering. He's got a lot of experience, and he's been involved in over 1,000 megawatts of wind, and actually was the construction manager for about 270 megawatts of it. So Paul has a lot of experience, and he's going to talk about the construction phase of the project.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's good. As Tim said, the last and final step of this process is the construction. Although after we construct it, then we own it and operate it. As he also mentioned, we own and operate about 8,000 megawatts of projects around the world. And so we know what we like and the way the wind projects work. So when we hire someone to build a project, we know what we want at the end of the day. And so we put our own people on site to manage that construction process. And that's the way that we end up with a product that we like, and also you as local people to the project, either landowners that are involved with the project or nearby, can take comfort in knowing that we're going to end up with a project that we can all live with in the long term. So during the construction of the project, which will take somewhere between 6 and 9 months, depending on certain conditions of the weather and other things, we'll have up to 130 construction workers during that time frame. And we will be building the project to meet all the local requirements, state and federal, including stormwater, so that you can be comfortable that there won't be any problems with any of your fields or those kinds of issues. We're very, very tight with our own contractors about making sure that those things work. As Tim said, the target and service date for this project is in 2010 or 11. We could potentially split the construction cycle over 2 years, and again, that depends a bit on the delivery of turbines and when those become available. What would be typical if we split this project over 2 years is we would build the roads and foundations in 1 year, install some of the turbines, and then come back in the next year and finish the delivery of the turbines. And there is quite a bit of logistics in moving 160 to 200 machines. Each turbine is somewhere between 8 and 10 semis worth of equipment, and plus all the other construction equipment going along. This is a typical road. In the foreground, we've stripped the topsoil and have begun to lay down a fabric. And then behind that fabric, you can see the crushed rock, which is the permanent road location. If you see also, it's generally level with the existing grade. That's the way we build our permanent construction roads so that the landowners can easily continue their farming. They can drive across the road to do their farming and not have that be an impediment. And those roads are also available to the landowners for their own access to the fields. Picture on the left, you can see essentially the same kind of a picture. The road has been constructed, and then the area to the left and right of each of those roads is basically reclaimed land. We build to that width to allow our cranes to walk between the turbines to construct the turbine. And then at the completion of the construction, then we grade that smooth, and the farmer can then go back and grow his crops right up to the edge of the field. If you look at this picture on the right, you can see that the corn is planted right up to the edge of the road, and that's perfectly fine with us. On the left is, actually both of these are foundations in construction. The turbine base there, the foundation, is about 50 feet across. And from the center of the picture, where you can see the steel sticking up, that's where we grade. That's the existing grade of the project, of the land. And it's about 8 feet from there down to the base where the hole has been dug out. And that's all backfilled and the ground brought back to level. Picture on the right is the pouring of the concrete. So this is the completed foundation. As you can see, the grade has been brought back to the edge of the pedestal. The steel bolt sticking up are where we bolt the tower components to it. And here's the erection of the tower components. Depending on the type of the turbine, there's 3 or 4 pieces. These sections are lifted into place on that turbine base and then bolted together. Final picture here of the turbine in erection, 3 or 4 tower pieces in a cell at the top, and then the rotor being flown up. That crane is about 365 feet tall, and depending on the type of turbine, can lift up to 300 tons. The collector system here is shown. It's what's typical is that we have a trenching machine that comes through, cuts a trench, lays the cable, and then we come back right behind it and backfill the trench. This is then brought together in a collector system. And for the specific Buffalo Ridge 2 project, we have a north substation where we step the voltage up to 115 kV and then bring that power down to the Brookings substation. In the southern end of the project, this collector system here is brought down to what we're calling the Buffalo Ridge 2 South substation, and then it is adjacent to the Brookings County substation. So those power lines, the overhead, this is a 115 kV pole. It's about 50 feet tall. It would carry the power from the north substation. And then closer to the south end of the project, we would have all of the project on one right-of-way so that all 306 megawatts of the project are brought down to adjacent to the Brookings substation. Now I'd like to introduce Dave Sweet. He's Director of Operations located here in the adjacent area of Brookings, managing both the Mendocota and Buffalo Ridge 1 project.
My job is going to be basically to run the operations and maintenance of the site once it's built and turned over to me. Currently what we're planning is 15 to 20 people that will be hired in out of the local community. We will at that point train the individuals, knowing that a lot of young farmers, things of that nature, trying to get into the business, have really no experience in the wind industry. Once we get them hired in, like I said, we'll get them trained up with the specific turbine types, things of that nature, and we'll be performing all of the scheduled and unscheduled maintenance routine there at the site. What I mean by scheduled is every 6 months we go through and we do the normal operations maintenance for the towers, which is basically checking the lubes, oils, greases, things of that nature, looking for loose wires, making sure that the turbines are ready and operational for whenever the wind is blowing. Unscheduled maintenance is basically any time that a turbine is not available to operate during that windy period, whether it's a breakdown, whether it's unscheduled retrofits by the manufacturer, things of that nature that we need to take a look at during that time frame. We will also be responsible for all balance of plant, which means snow removal from the local turbine roads. It means taking care of the electrical systems, both underground and overhead, things of that nature. And has been mentioned, you know, I will be the primary contact and the face between Iberdrola Renewables and the landowners. So if there's any, you know, questions or concerns, things of that nature, I'm at the plant at all times, you know, Monday through Friday, and or can be reached by cell phone to address any of the issues at that point. This is a typical O&M facility that we are currently running out of at the Mendicota site down here in Brookings County over near Elkton. And we currently run 124 towers out of that facility there. I'll turn it back over to you.
Thank you. Commissioners, that concludes our presentation. We'd be glad to give it back to you for the rest of the night.
Great. Thanks very much. One reminder, if you haven't signed in at the back of the room, we would really ask you to. That is our only record of the attendance of this evening's meeting. We'd like it for the official record. So if you would please make sure to sign in if you haven't yet, we would really appreciate that. What would be typical at this point would be for the commissioners to ask a few questions. Because of the large attendance tonight, we're actually going to forgo our questions. We'll have lots of opportunities as a part of this process to ask questions. So at this point, we'll open it up to you. We're going to scratch what I suggested earlier. Rather than use the center aisle as sort of a queue area, we're going to have you go ahead and raise your hand if you want to speak. I mean, it can be a little bit of intimidating to stand in front of everybody, so we'll let you make comments from your spot. Raise your hand. We'll hustle a mic over there. We're going to ask you before you start speaking, or the first thing to do when you start speaking, is to say your name. And, again, speak clearly and loudly so that Ms. Risty can hear you. And let us know if you've got a question or a comment so that we can get you taken care of appropriately. All right, let's open it up. Who's got a question or a comment? I know there's other stuff going on in Brookings tonight. This isn't the only game in town, so. Any comments about the facility?
Everyone here is opposed to it, I assume.
I'm Terrell Spence. I live on the my family and I live on the West Terrell, T-E-R-R-E-L-L, Spence, S-P-E-N-C-E. My family and I have a small acreage, so we're not farmers out in the region, and we're on the, I guess, the northwest sector in Argo Township. And my wife and I have discussed this. We haven't had much information prior to now since we're not involved as a landowner, only a neighbor. We moved out to South Dakota about 19 years ago from New Jersey, of all places, although we're native Southerners. But we'd always wanted to get back to land. That's where why we ended up with our acreage. And in that time, we've had a few things change, as likely as to happen. Some power lines that were involved, one of the larger dairies, whatnot, have moved into the region, and now we have the wind power, which we are actually in support of. It's one of those things where it's for the greater good, but at the same time, you have your not-in-my-backyard kind of reaction as well because of our lifestyle. We're not raising cattle or anything like that. We moved out there for, if you will, the aesthetics and the quiet and so forth. Well, I'll not go any further with that, but it does affect our lifestyle individually, just as this whole project would affect so many other people's lives through the provision of the power that's involved. I guess what I'm getting at is I've researched a little bit regarding land values, and there's not a lot of data out there reflecting what might happen as far as the impact with our acreage. I'm estimating we are going to be within 800 feet, I suppose, of the towers on our south and slightly more of those on our north. At any rate, is there any recourse or any anything that would lighten the burden from our point of view? Would somebody like to buy our acreage, for example? But we won't know the effect until they're up. You know, we realize that. But does anybody have any information regarding the devaluing of adjacent properties that are not involved with the actual process? That's all.
Good question. Thanks.
I see you looking over this way, so I think you're asking us to take a stab at that. There have been some studies on property values adjacent to wind projects in a couple of states, including Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Iowa, and Illinois, and that study indicated that property values did not go down for adjacent landowners or for landowners that are part of the project. So, and I think we talk about that study in our report. So, but you're right, there haven't been a number of studies on that. But that's, you know, there have been studies that we're aware of show that there hasn't been a devaluation from being adjacent to wind turbines.
And Mr. Seck, if he provided you with contact information, would somebody at Iberdrola be willing to point him toward a hyperlink or some of the location where a study might be?
Yeah, I'd be happy to.
Okay,
yeah.
You could come up and talk to Mr. Seck afterwards. We'll see if he can get you that information. Other questions or comments?
I'm John Leiferman. I live on Buffalo Ridge 2 that just completed up here north of Elkton. And about 7 years ago, I was fortunate enough to make phone calls to different companies, and I was one of the first people to contact Iberdrola, and they came over to South Dakota, and so we were the first to sign up in the state here. And I want to say that these are the people, the most professional people I've ever worked with in my life. And in the construction of Buffalo Ridge, too, there was some, you know, I talked with some people in Minnesota that there was some damage of township roads, and there was a lot of complaints about not being reimbursed, but my wife's on our township school board, our township board, and with the last completion there, they reimbursed us for some construction. So I was very pleased. They took care of all the gravel roads in our township, which was a big concern because a lot of townships do not have a big budget to begin with. And we checked out in Elkton there. They had an opt-out because of taxes. They didn't have enough taxes, and we find out there's going to be approximately $80,000 from the Gulf of Mendocota that will be going to the school district, Elkton School District, this next year in May. That's a huge boost to a small community like that. And I have no... I support it 100% because it's good for the – we have a lot of pastures on our land, and we have beautiful new roads through there. And another thing is when they were building the towers, there was we had some concerns about where the roads would go, and Tim sat down with us and my brother, and there was – and we worked out – we asked what the best place was for the road, and they worked with us in every situation we had a complaint. They sat down with us and worked it out. And so I encourage anybody who's interested in being a part of this project, I support it 100% because they're very professional with their work. Oh, Leiferman.
Thanks very much. Other comments or questions?
Yeah, I'm Dennis Falcon, Brookings County Commissioner, and I just want to go on record here just to let you know that we support wind energy in Brookings County. The commission does. We've, again, had two of these before, and our zoning office has gone to a lot of effort to make sure we protect the property owners and the setbacks, and that's exactly what was talked about here. And we'll have a hearing tomorrow night at our planning and zoning meeting and hear all the information that some more of the information in depth that you heard tonight. But I just want to go on record that our county commission does support the wind energy in Brookings County.
I'm Bill Bird. I'm a trustee for the town of Toronto. I'm down here to find out how Toronto will benefit from this project. What kind of money can the town expect? The town is always short of money, you know.
Thank you for that question. I don't have at the tip of my tongue an estimate of how Toronto specifically will benefit, but certainly during construction, it will have, you know, as we indicated, a number of people in the community, and whenever I'm in the community, I'm meeting in Toronto. So during construction, you'll have kind of increased goods and services. You'll have more workers in the area buying goods and services and homes. But long term, the real benefit is in two things. There'll be increased payments. There'll be payments to landowners in the area, which will infuse a significant amount of additional revenue into the community, which I think will circulate around through the community, number one. But more directly, there'll be we'll be paying substantial taxes on the wind project that will benefit the school districts, as was indicated earlier, the townships and the county. So, you know, that will benefit kind of everybody at large that lives in these communities. So, you know, I think there'll be substantial kind of direct benefits and a number of indirect benefits from these projects.
Question number two, what do you expect from the volunteer fire department?
I'm going to turn that over to Dave Sweet.
Our expectations for the fire department are basically to help participate. We do have an EHS procedure that is in place. We have all of our technicians that are trained in tower rescue, things of that nature. We do have some EMTs currently on staff, and anybody that is a volunteer that would like to, you know, hire in, that is, you know, fully acceptable also, at which point what we would like to do is integrate with the volunteers, invite them out, let them see what the wind turbines are about, see basically what would be involved in a tower rescue. Nine times out of ten, in my 12 years of experience, we would have, even in our exercises, we have somebody on the ground before the volunteers would actually get there. And that's just due to location, things of that nature, and how prepared we are. So basically, I would ask the volunteers, volunteer firefighters to be involved, to come out when we do invite you, see the towers, you know, that kind of stuff, and just be prepared.
All right, another question. What happens if you call the fire department and a tower is destroyed? What liability are they? Is there any liability involved?
Your liability, and Tim, correct me if I'm mistaken, but your liability would be the same as if you went to a residential location and fought a fire there. You're basically, all you're going to be requested to do is maintain the local area where the fire would be, and other than that, there is no liability that I see for the fire department.
Thank you for your information.
Thank you.
Stacy, right up here.
My name is Jan Rolofsen, R-O-E-L-O-F-S-E-N. We're excited to have Iberdrola in our area with the Buffalo 2 project. We feel that it's going to be a big economic impact for our area. I know that there's young people already talking about the possibility of jobs with the wind tower project, either, you know, building or later on with, you know, what needs to be done. And I have served on the school board, and I know that the money that will come in as tax money will be a great benefit to the Dubrook School District. Also, it will be a benefit to the farmers and the people that are going to have the wind towers. And we need that economic development here in our county. So we would really appreciate your support of this project. Thank you.
Other questions or comments?
My name is Sharon Leiferman, L-E-I-F-E-R-M-A-N. I live in eastern South Dakota, right between the Mendocota 1 project and the Buffalo Ridge 1 project. And we are also involved in the Buffalo 2 project. Several of the comments I was going to make have already been made by other people. But the things I wanted to touch on were one of the biggest things about wind is that it's such a clean power. I've often said that I would rather have a wind project in my backyard, and I will. These are in my backyard. But I would rather have a wind project in my backyard than a coal plant within 40 miles or a nuclear reactor within 100. We look at the state of the energy in our country, and we realize that the electrical demand is rising and that our existing technologies of hydro cannot keep up. We've went through enough years of drought here in South Dakota. We've seen what happens. You know, people are fighting over keep the water in the dam or let the water go, according to whether you're on the fishing side or the recreation side or the power side. So hydro is not all that dependable. I don't wish to ever see another Chernobyl. That's why I don't want nuclear around. Coal does not result in zero emissions, as far as I've ever heard. They've cleaned up their act, but they are not clean. So wind is a big thing in our community. It's a big asset. We know that there has to be wind, or there has to be electrical generation boost in this country, and it's going to have to be somewhere. And I, like Mr. Spence, would maybe just as soon not see it right in our backyard, but I'd rather have it there than a number of other things. The country has to do something to raise their energy production, and this is one of the best I've seen. So I just wanted to lay that thought out. Another thing is that as a landowner, this provides an income stream that's not affected by any agricultural commodity market. This is not tied to anything that we know. Okay, it's not tied to land values, either existing or future. They could go up and down, but this stream is guaranteed. So these are things to think about. And something that was already touched on was the dollars coming into communities get respent and respent. The studies I've seen are anywhere from 4 to 10 times that dollar changes hands. So that's a big boost first to the landowners, then to everybody downstream from them. So things to think about. We've already touched on taxes that will help support the local schools who are being starved at the state level. And if the Public Utilities Commission has any influence with that, we would greatly appreciate putting a bug in the ear of the revenue department that you can't keep siphoning money out of these areas and not sending it back. You know, if this power is being generated in this area, why can't our schools retain more of it? Because otherwise the burden does come back on the landowners. You know, we can't close the schools. We need to keep them open. One comment I'd like to make is that wasn't addressed by Iberdrola was that the setback requirements are a minimum of 1,000 feet or more. So it'll be a little further than, pardon me? Well, right. I mean, so the sound would make it even further if so. You know, so you got a little more safety cushion there. My husband's already talked about another of the benefits that we will see is that a lot of these turbines are in our pastures, and we're going to get some wonderful roads out of that, which is greatly going to decrease the wear and tear on our trucks and trailers when we're moving in and out of those pastures. So there's a lot of benefits to this that maybe haven't been touched on tonight, and I just wanted to mention them.
Thanks. Other questions or comments?
I'm Dwayne Knutson. I'm a member of the Brookings County Planning and Zoning Commission. I'd just like to say that, you know, they've already got a project in place, and as far as what Pete Leiferman said, I'd like to back that up. They are professional. You know, their homework is done before they got here, and it's just been, you know, I don't work with it like Bob does on a day-to-day basis, but there just haven't been a lot of issues. And, you know, it's in their best interest to get any problems corrected right away, and apparently it's happening that way. So I'm all for it.
Thanks very much.
I just wanted to comment on your, excuse me, comment about the schooling. Since we've seen development like this in South Dakota, Michibotech does actually offer a program now for turbine training. So any of those students that you have contact with in your school today, be sure to put a bug in there. I know there's a lot of interest, but that should hopefully become something else that South Dakota can depend on.
I want to thank the PUC for coming tonight. That shows your interest. I'm Norris Patrick from Oak Lake Township. I think I want to keep the input as far as the local farmers as to where the turbines go and where the roads go. I want to keep that in there so we can talk to you. And Tim told me tonight that's available. But I think that's a big part. So it doesn't get to be such a hassle. It can be good and it can be bad. And that's the way it's going to sell for you guys. Thank you. N-O-R-R-I-S, Patrick. You're an Irish, aren't you? Thank you.
Other questions, comments? Right up here, this is Splitstosher. Oh, no, you go ahead.
Walt Iverson, and I'm on the north edge of Brookings County, right up where the, it looks like the towers for now probably are not going to be built north of us, but right on the right south of the Brookings Dual County line, landowner. And having worked with this company now for, well, it started out with Robert Erickson, that came around getting us interested in signing leases. And from that point on, I'd say that our working with this company has been very favorable. We've been impressed with their cooperation and their willingness to listen to those of us that are landowners and to get our input. And if that working relationship would continue on into the future, I would have nothing but good to say about the company, and we're excited for what it might do for our community. Thank you.
My name is Catherine Carter, C-A-R-T-E-R. Catherine Carter, C-A-R-T-E-R, C-A-R-T-E-R. I have a question about the 50 decibel level. Actually, that would be dBA adjusted for, yeah. Okay, a question about the 50 decibel adjusted level. Okay. I understand that is the level that you're using as the cutoff point for placement in part, right? They're using the 50 decibel level as one of their criteria for placement. Is that correct?
That's one of the criteria. It's actually the greater of
1,000 feet or 50
dBA. And our modeling shows that we meet the 50 dBA with a setback of about, with our noisiest turbine, at about 625 feet. So we've got a pretty significant, you know, cushion going to 1,000 feet.
Mm-hmm. But you don't know yet what turbines you're going to be using, right? And there's substantial differences in the sound emission by those different turbines, right, on your figure. You have a figure in your report?
Yes.
There's a substantial difference, and you don't yet know which turbines you're using, right? Plus, I also wanted to ask, so I want to know what criteria you use, since you don't know at this point, to decide which turbines you'll get. I assume some of that's partly out of your hands, perhaps. I'm not sure how that works. So I want to know about how that works. And do we have any input on that, since there is a substantial difference in the sound emission of those different turbines. And the other thing is, what is the South Dakota standard? Do we have a standard? I know 50 is about like light traffic at 100 feet. And it's the standard often used, 50 dBA, for like construction in like suburban areas, things like that. But we're not talking about that kind of areas. I know some places, Massachusetts, for example, are looking at lower levels. And of course, you go 10 decibels, you know, another 10 decibels, and you're effectively doubling perceived sound. Doubling perceived sound.
We'll answer your question first about South Dakota standards and then turn it over to the applicant for their comments. There is not a standard in South Dakota state law, but the commission has used similar standards in recent siting orders. And, you know, any of the analysts will correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it hasn't been unusual for the commission to have use a 50 decibel level, but it's at the nearest property line, which would be generally, you know, closer than the actual residence. If we could go ahead and have you say that to the mic one more time so that I can...
In their application, I believe they specify these values are to the resident, not to the property line.
What they, and I say this with all due respect to the applicant, but it doesn't really matter what they propose. I mean, it matters, but ultimately they don't get to decide what the order says. And so, you know... quite instructive might be what the commission has had as a general rule of thumb in the past. I don't want to rephrase your question, and so I'll ask the applicant to answer the question as you put it. I might just add one more, which is, assuming your noisiest turbine, do you have, and we're not, I mean, I don't need the exact number, but give us an idea of, with your noisiest turbine, what your estimated decibel level has been in your studies at 1,000 feet, if you have that information.
Thank you, Commissioner Johnson. Our noisiest turbine to meet the 50 dBA is, we meet that standard at 625 feet. I don't have, do we have for the 1,000, what it is at 1,000 feet? I don't think we have the number at 1,000 feet, but we clearly meet, even with our noisiest turbine, we meet the 50 dBA standard at 625 feet. So our quieter turbine will meet it even closer in than that standard. And then if I can respond to Ms. Carter's couple of questions. In terms of, like I just said, the 625 feet at 50 dBA is assuming are the noisiest turbine that we're proposing. But clearly any turbine that we propose, if it was different than that, we'd have to adjust our setbacks based on that turbine if it's noisier. I don't anticipate that we'll have a turbine that's it's noisier than the one that meets that standard at 625. In terms of what that standard means, and many other states that have a noise standard, like in the neighboring state of Minnesota, that 50 dBA is a nighttime noise standard. So it's meant to be a quieter standard than what's allowed during the day. So it's supposed to be a standard that reflects at night you're expecting a quieter atmosphere. In our application, we talk about what does 50 dBA sound like. And 50 dBA sounds like kind of when you're in an office and you've got kind of, you know, without talking, you've got kind of the normal background noise. And that's kind of what a 50 dBA standard is kind of the background noise that you'd expect to hear in an office. So that's, you know, and I think you had a third question. Those were the two questions I remember. So if there's,
John Lyfram again.
Sorry, John. Just to flesh this out a little bit more, I think I remember that noise dissipates logarithmically. Is that correct? And that's just a fancy way for saying the further you get away from 625, sound dissipates rather quickly. And so I just put to mention that. Sorry, John, go ahead.
A few months ago, I was talking with Tim Seck, and he was talking about putting this proposal before... A few months ago, I was visiting with Tim Seck, and he was talking about putting a presentation in to, you know, the public utilities commissioners about Buffalo Ridge 2, and it was going to be a $700 million project, but Tim did not know what size turbines they were going to get yet, because it was, a lot of these manufacturers are sold out years in advance, and he was wondering why the state was so picky. I mean, if they develop a site, they don't know what size turbines are going to be, so they might have to move the turbines. And he made it sound, if I'm correct, that once you put a site down, you can't move it. Am I correct, Tim? Help me with this. What was the problem that you saw with presenting this? Remember how you discussed that with me?
John, I think that there have been some differences in permitting, but in terms of different states being open to kind of a more fluid process called permit the box. And I think in South Dakota, they're considering a permit the box approach. And so that would, you know, but it's really up to the commission to make that final determination. Certainly that kind of a process makes it a lot easier to develop a wind project that is constantly kind of changing based on all the input that's coming in all the way to construction. So that's the answer to that. In terms of I guess going back to that noise question, my colleague indicated that his estimate of what that noisiest turbine would be at 1,000 feet would be about 40 dBA. We'll confirm that. But I can also tell you that, you know, we've had the Mid-Dakota project up and operational for over a year, and the setback requirements for the Mid-Dakota project was 50 dBA or 500 feet. We have some turbines that are well within 1,000 feet of homes, and we haven't had any complaints on noise from those turbines. So we're not proposing to be any closer than 1,000 feet, but we certainly have turbines closer than that, and they haven't been issues in the community.
For those of you that don't have the benefit of having an application right in front of you, on page 74, they do list a sound chart, and at 40 decibels, which again is subject to check, what the applicant has said, it would be at 1,000 feet. 40 decibels is approximately the background noise in a living room if the television set is off. Okay, other questions or comments?
About a third of the houses, about a third of the residents are estimated to be, I think, what, 45 to 50? 40, in that 40 to 50 range. And I'd kind of like to see a contour map as well. A contour map, decibels in relation to residences. And that's not part of there. That'd be nice to see that.
What do you mean by 40 or 50, within 40 to 50?
Yes, dBA.
Okay. And we may want to flesh this out a little bit more with you, have staff and the applicant get together and have some comments with you, because I think what the application says is that they'll be the furthest away of one of two criteria, either 50 dBA or 1,000 feet. And again, subject to check, it sounds like at 1,000 feet, it would be 40 decibels rather than 50. So, no, that's a great point. That's absolutely right. These things are very site-specific. You're absolutely right. Other questions or comments?
Brad Olson, I'm a landowner over in the west side of this project. I'd just like to make one comment, I guess. You know, this isn't all great for the tax base. My wife and I have spent a working career buying and paying for a piece of land over there to build our dream home. You know, and this project has ended that dream for us. Now, I opted out of it. I looked at the lease, talked with attorneys, didn't believe it was fair to the landowners, and decided not to go with it personally. The lease. Land lease. But I just wanted that to go on record. Thank you.
That's an excellent point. It certainly has an effect on the community. Other comments, questions? Other comments or questions? We give you one more shot, but we'll just mention two other things while you maybe collect your thoughts. First off, again, there is the application that's filed online, and if you want some more information about how to navigate that, please let us know. We'd be happy to help you. Also, paper copies of the application are on file at the Dual and Brookings County, I believe it's the auditor's office. And so you can check that out if you need to take a look at a hard copy. Also, you know, certainly on behalf of, you know, Commissioners Gary Hansen, Steve Kolbeck, I'm Commissioner Dusty Johnson, and we'll stick around here afterwards. You know, we prefer to get your comments in an open session like this or in writing so that we can think about them and have them on file and share them with, you know, staff and the applicant. But if you're not comfortable doing that, we'd be happy to chat with you tonight, too, about general questions and concerns you might have. And staff members, again, Ms. Semler, Mr. Binder, Ms. Splitstosher, Mr. Rounds, Mr. Smith, and Mr. Islove would also be happy to help walk you through the process and let you know kind of what we're doing on our, what we intend to do on our end. Other questions or comments? Other questions or comments? Again, the intervention deadline is January 16th. And if there are no further questions or comments, we'll bring this public input hearing to a close. Thank you very much and have a good evening.